Welcome back to Following Know It on a Stormlight Podcast. This week, we are in Wind and Truth Preview Number 2. We are in Chapters 1 and 2 that Reactor Tor gave us this last week. Tim, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. David?
I'm doing great. Excited to talk about more Stormlight.
It does feel really nice to be reading Stormlight chapters. I think I'd read one of these two before. I hadn't read both, but it does feel very nice to see that the Kaladin banner on the top of the chapter once again. So let's roll intro, and then we'll talk about chapters 1 and 2 of Wind and Truth. All right, I'll start with you, David. What did you notice first about these chapters? There's something that really stood out to me even before the chapter started that I want to talk about.
I do too, and I think it's appropriate to talk about it first. It says day one instead of part one.
Yeah, it says that's really cool. I'm like, I know that's kind of a minor thing. It's just a book formatting thing, but that's kind of exciting.
It has so many implications. I do want to point out, it also says Kaladin Shallan below it, which is actually kind of a callback because Kaladin and Shallan were also the only POVs of part one of Way of Kings.
Yeah.
And so it also means we're only getting Kaladin and Shallan on day one, but how long is day one? How many chapters? Is this it?
That's a good question. Tim, do you think like part one, that the page part one is just left out, or do you think there aren't parts and there's days in this book?
I think that that it's not going to be physically part one, part two, part three, but I think logically it'll be, you know, a few parts kind of make up part one, a few parts make up part two. I remember Brandon was talking in one of his videos that it wasn't that we were getting the first part, it was that we were getting the first section. And I think he was referring to this.
Okay. So you don't think there'll be rigid part 1 through 5 of a normal Stormlight book?
No. But I think we'll follow a similar progression. It'll just be shorter parts, so to speak.
Sure.
I have so many questions about this because are we literally just, is it 10 days for the whole book? Maybe 11 days? I instinctually, I don't want that. Like, I don't see how Stormlight arc one of Stormlight ends on the day of the Contest of Champions. I just don't see that. And of course, we can get epilogues, like we got 7 epilogues in The Lost Metal, so he could do that, but like I feel like there's so much to do after the Contest of Champions. I was thinking Contest of Champions, I was predicting what happened end of part one or maybe end of part two. So I really need to know, like, how many chapters/pages are going to be in day 1 through day 10, and is that going to be consistent per day, or is like day 8 just going to be somehow half the book? Like, all these questions, and I don't have answers. But
yeah, I definitely don't have answers either, but I will predict that we will still have part 1 through 5 pages, and they're just cut out of these preview chapters. Like, I think we skipped it. I think part 1 was the previous page and it wasn't copied. Now that said, where does day 1 through 10 layout as far as parts 1 through 5? Does it go to part 3? Does it go to part 5? I don't know. If I were to predict, I would still lean the way that you're leaning or wanting, David, that the contest is done by part 4 of the book. That would be my guess. Because not only is that my guess, that's what I want. Like you said, I want there to be plenty of wrap up, plenty of repercussions for the contest and I want to see it all, right? Like I don't want the contest to be in the last, you know, 20 chapters of the book and then we're frantically trying to close all the doors on all of our characters for the next, you know, 6-8 years or whatever. So
yeah, I'm fully with you there. I thinking about it now, I hope it's not how I was saying with the days taking over, because this is ending the first really big arc, and I really want good closure with our characters and what the new status quo is moving forward. I really think that we're not going to end up with our classic the heroes win. I think there's going to be at least some level of Dalinar's probably going to lose. And I want to know what the effects of that will be.
Yeah.
Let's think about, like, this is what I'm thinking about right now. Just, how do the other books end? Right. So Way of Kings doesn't end with the tower. There's a lot after that. Right.
Right.
Words of Radiance doesn't end with the storms colliding.
Right.
They go to Yur-Thiru. Oathbringer, Battle of Thalen Field is pretty close to the end.
There's, I think there's 2 wrap-up chapters in Oathbringer and it's done.
Yeah. Rhythm of War, not a whole lot of wrap-up either. What would be like the climactic battle of Rhythm of War? Is that Kaladin? The whole sequence of Kaladin fighting the Pursuer? And
then... Right, when he's getting his fourth ideal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Along with Navani and Sangher ideal and all that.
There are, so there's 5 chapters after the tower in The Way of Kings, and that's all of part 5 is 5 chapters in an epilogue. Might be 6 chapters, actually. Words of Radiance, the Everstorm and the High Storm is in part 5, but there's still plenty of wrap-up. I think there's another 5 chapters after that as well. In Oathbringer, like you said, there's not much closure in Oathbringer besides an off-screen wedding. And then, in Rhythm of War, I believe there's 5 chapters after Kaladin gets his armor as well.
Of note, day 1, you know, of Wind and Truth, that's like a day after the end of Rhythm of War, isn't it?
Yeah, a day or 2, yeah.
Yeah.
So we don't have much time in between. Remember, between Oathbringer and Rhythm of War, we had a whole year, but and a novella. So if he ever writes Horn Eater, that's not going to be a gap between the 2 books. That's going to have to overlap with them.
Right. Well, yeah, I assume it's during Rhythm of War, or even maybe during Wind and Truth. And maybe that's why he hasn't written it yet, because he wanted to make sure Wind and Truth was nailed down and then had that to for the backdrop of Horn Eater.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I'd completely forgotten about that, but I want to know what Rock is up to.
Me too. I love Rock.
Yeah,
he's even mentioned in this chapter, and
yeah,
like,
yeah,
Brandon, you're taunting me, man. I want to know what happened. Okay, so chapter 1, Unfamiliar Ground. And then before the chapter even starts, we have epigraphs. I'm so excited. Okay, so we have epigraphs. And for those of you who don't have it in front of them, they are authored from Knights of Wind and Truth, page 1 and then page 3. And I'll go ahead and read them. The first one is, I should have known I was being watched. All my life, the signs were there, from page 1. I first knew the wind as a child. During days before, I knew dreams. What need has a child of dreams or aspirations? They live and love the life that is. From page 3.
I think there's a lot to unpack here.
Yeah.
I think the 2 things I would want to unpack are the wind and whether that relates to what's happening in this chapter. And then also who wrote it.
Right.
With the obvious, probably misdirect of it being Kaladin.
Yeah. So, I mean, the number 1 suspect would be Kaladin, right? Either as a a postscript of the Contest of Champions, and he sits down and writes this book. That I feel like there's a over 50% chance that that's what we're looking at here, and that's what we're made to think. But any other ideas, gentlemen?
Well, I've got a few quotes that I'd like to read.
Okay.
But if you have anything to say, David, why don't you go ahead and then I can read these quotes.
The only thing I'll say is if it's written by Kaladin, he's got a ghostwriter because he's never sounded like that before. It's a very poetic. So it could be a case of very old Kaladin who's learned how to, you know, be poetic, which is possible. But like, I've never heard Kaladin sound anything like that before. So that's why I'm leaning against Kaladin.
Do you think it's too profound, like, and like contemplative for Kaladin, or?
It's not the content. It's the language itself, right? Like, it just sounds very flowery, poetic writing, especially the second chapter's one. Like, I first knew the wind as a child during the days before I knew dreams. What need has a child of dreams and aspirations? They live and love the life that is. Like, that's a poem right there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Kaladin has never written a poem in his life, I'm sure. He's witty and he can read glyphs and all that, but like, if that was a quote, like if you were in a trivia contest for Stormlight Archive and that quote was given, Kaladin would be at the bottom of your list.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, that's definitely a solid point in the favor of it not being him. I think it could be him. Like you were saying, in the future, because he's definitely going down this path of he's no longer a warrior, no longer fighting, and he's trying to figure out how to help people. And so I could see that leading to really contemplative, thoughtful, and perhaps coming out, or maybe translated like Gavilar's words were made prettier by the scribes taking it down. But let me get down into these quotes. That really connect to what's in the chapter, but they also connect to this. Let me see. From earlier, these are all from Words of Radiance. And this first one is from when Kaladin asks Syl, you know, how did you find me? She replies, I knew I needed to find you, and the winds knew you. They led me to you. Winds is double, lowercase w there, but very curious and connected to what we're talking about. And then these next two are really close to each other. It's when Kaladin fights Zeth. This first one, he says, you sent him to the sky to die, assassin, Kaladin said, Stormlight puffing from his lips. But the sky and the winds are mine. I claim them as I now claim your life. And then this last one. The wind is mine. The sky is mine. They have been mine since childhood. You are the trespasser here, not me. All of those really, really point to it being Kaladin. The verbiage there that he is using to refer to himself and the wind. It's very much that claiming. And it's been a part of my whole life. And I could see those quotes being translated to what we saw in that first epigraph, especially.
That's a really good point. I think that those quotes really well at least mirror what we're seeing in these epigraphs. So that actually opens up a lot of questions. Also, the quotes you have are more flowery than I remember Kaladin being. And I remember thinking to myself, Sanderson's just wanting to like make this an epic scene.
Well, specifically Words of Radiance gets rather wordy at the end of it. There's quite a few monologues at the end of Words of Radiance from all sorts of people. So.
Yeah, and there's that moment where Syl says, stretch forth thy hand, which is epic, but it's definitely, she never talks like that ever again. So it's a strange moment.
She just thought it would be epic, you know? the one thing I want to point out, the reason why I think it might be like a mirror rather than Kaladin himself having written this. Like, maybe this is something that happens to people. Like, the wind chooses someone as a child and follows them through their life. Or, you know, and it could be like, even like, is Tava Ren the right word to use for Wheel of Time? Basically, the concept of people who have destinies in the world.
I'm not well versed.
That's okay.
I've read it, but I don't remember the specific word.
It's not a Wheel of Time podcast. I was just trying to use it. But basically, most fantasy has the concept of people with destiny. So I'm wondering if this is a bit more realized on Roshar, that there's actually a spren of destiny of the wind.
Yeah.
But one thing I do want to point out, the reason that I think it's a mirror, which, coming back to that, I talked about a lot of things and not finishing my sentence, is what need has a child of dreams or aspirations? I remember Kaladin's flashback chapters, and I remember him wanting to be a soldier as a child. He wanted to be a soldier. First, he wanted to be a surgeon. Then he wanted to be a soldier. I don't remember exactly when that happened, but like, he had dreams and aspirations of all kinds as a child.
Right.
So why would he write, what need has a child of dreams or aspirations?
Mm-hmm.
All right. You ready for a crazy theory?
Sure.
Not a lot of substance to it, but I can't get it out of my head. What if this is either of Kaladin's brothers? One of the two. I should have known I was being watched. Put a pin on that for a second. All of my life there were signs. I first knew the wind as a child. That could be referring to Kaladin. The wind is Kaladin. Before, during the days before I knew dreams. What need has a child for dreams and aspirations? They live and love in the life that is. There's a word of Brandon out there, that Tien was attracting cryptics as a kid. That would lead into the first one. And then there isn't that much more to it besides that, but I wanted to throw it out there. What if this is either, you know, teenage Oridin after watching the events of Wind and Truth, or, you know, I don't want to get into my TN theory, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I see a lot there. And I think that could definitely have a big point. I think it would be more likely to be Oridin, because I think it really is this character claiming the winds. And, you know, TN had nothing with that. But I could also see this being Kaladin before he reached his adolescence. Before he really had to worry about things. We get his first flashbacks are he wasn't thinking about being a soldier or anything. And then it was like he was just getting into that age where he was trying to think about his place in life. What do you think, David?
Yeah, I really like the idea of it being Tien or Oridin. That's his name, right? Oridin?
Oridin, yeah.
Yeah. We don't know much about Oridin because he plays with his box, but I could see especially Oridin having kind of a carefree childhood. He kind of just lives in the moment. So he's that age. And so, like, could this be Oridin kind of documenting what happened with Kaladin? Because Kaladin's not around anymore and Oridin documents it. Like, right. That would mean that. Yeah, and who knows, Oridin may have the poetic charm there.
Right.
So, and I like that idea. It's kind of like Sam finishing the Lord of the Rings, you know?
Ooh, yeah. Well, that hits me in the heart.
And especially if the Contest of Champions goes well, but maybe not for Kaladin. That could be Oridin growing up in a carefree, peaceful environment, like you're saying, and then writing this in the memory of Kaladin, you know, that type of thing.
Can we, unless anyone else has something to say about these epigraphs?
That's all I had.
I want to transition this into, is the wind that's being talked about, the capital W wind being talked about in these epigraphs, is that the voice that Kaladin is hearing in these chapters? Or is that something else?
I would lean towards most probably. However, is that a low ball for the first chapter of Wind and Truth? Yes. Should I expect more from Sanderson? Yes. But I am tempted to say it is that simple.
I think that it's not the wind that's actually speaking, but like that Syl quote that I read for you, it's like the wind carrying messages, perhaps. But there's someone or something on the other side that's not the wind, because obviously the wind is everywhere. The wind is not stuck in Shinovar. He doesn't need to go free the wind. So that's my take on it.
Should we think about what the wind actually, or this voice actually says to Kaladin? Like,
he's definitely having a deliberate conversation with it. It's responding. Like, this isn't just like a unite them in the back of your head type thing. This is a whoever is talking can hear him and can reply.
Yeah.
I think it has to be a spren. I don't know if has to be might be too strong, but in my mind, I haven't considered anything other than it being a spren.
I think it's a shar somehow connected to the tower, talking with him through the tower, because Ishar's the bondsmith, correct?
Yes.
Totally off base there. So I would assume Ishar has ties to the tower, and now that the tower is on, he can Skype call anyone he wants in the tower, maybe.
That's really interesting, because unfortunately these events line up really closely, where I'm like, why is Kaladin now hearing the voice? And one thing that came to my mind is, well, he just said the fourth ideal. Could this just be a thing fourth ideal Windrunners can do, is talk to the wind?
No, it's
literally
maybe,
in their name. So like he said the fourth ideal, that unlocks new powers that all previous ideals have. So is talking to the wind a fourth ideal power? Because it does line up very well with that. But as you said, it also lines up with the tower waking up. So is it something to do with your Thiru and the sibling? Now I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. That's a solid point. I hadn't considered that. I think if it is Ishar, though, I think it would be more like the Eshonai situation, where she took in a spren, and that spren then controlled her, but there was still part of her that was crying out for help. If it is Ishar, I think it's a similar situation. The madness has control of him, but the true him is in the background crying for help.
So we could try picking apart what we know the wind said, like, you are what I need. I'm trying to just scroll through the chapter right now. It's hard to pick them out.
But you are what I need. Please come to me in Shinovar. Are the two main quotes, right?
Come to me in Shinovar is actually, I did.
Come to me in Shinovar.
I don't think it specifically said that, but it said the bondsmith. And then he said, oh, the bondsmith, Dalinar told me to go to Shinovar. So that could be false correlation.
Oh, you're right. So it says, listen to the bondsmith. Come to me, please. And then there's Kaladin internal dialogue. There was a high storm tonight. Kaladin thought using it to get to Shinovar. So you are right that Kaladin makes that jump, not the voice.
Yeah, Kaladin says, oh, listen to the bondsmith. Well, I know what the bondsmith's about to tell me. There's two bondsmiths now also.
True.
Yeah.
He's assuming it's Dalinar. Be more specific, Wind. Yeah. Why do they always have to talk in riddles?
True.
I mean, what I thought also it might, like, still on the spren angle, is this an unmade?
Mm. Yeah.
And sorry, just to say, along the same lines you were saying, Tim, with Ishar, the unmade were unmade from something else. Is there still a little voice and power to what they used to be? Could this be an unmade saying, hey, remake, unmake me? I don't know. Like, Jaanat or whatever Spren is in Shinnevar, or are there two Spren in or Unmaids in Shinnevar? How many are there? I don't know. But
I am under the firm belief that once the tower is on, the Unmade cannot be then there. Because when Moash is shoved out of the tower, his pain returns to him very briefly and then is once again taken away. And I think that was an Unmade being repelled and then coming back to him. I don't remember which one specifically. It's the one that consumes like pain and fear as like a...
Oh.
I don't remember which one of that is. Moloch, Nergal, one of those two.
I thought it was a direct connection with Odium that caused that. And because the tower switches off void light, it could break the connection to Odium. Maybe that's how that works.
Right. Maybe.
Your Unmade theory makes sense, though. Even if it's not exactly that, it's quite probable that it repels Unmade.
Yeah, I don't remember what episode I talked about this in the podcast, but that there was one episode where there's one of the Unmades that consumes pain and fear as like their thing. Christian from Lost in Roshar, he has the theory that that Unmade was assigned to the Devar family, and that's why the Devars were going through all sorts of crazy stuff. And then my theory was that now he's assigned to Moash, and that's how Moash can't feel anything right now, is Odium specifically assigned Unmade to him.
Yeah, so you're talking about Dygonarthus, also known as the Blackfisher?
Yes, I am.
And there's the quote, "Let me no longer hurt, let me no longer weep. Dygonarthus, the Blackfisher, holds my sorrow and consumes it."
Yep, there you go.
So we also know that Odium wanted Dalinar to give his pain. There's a, you know, really brief, unmemorable scene about Dalinar refusing to give his pain to
Odium. Yeah, not important.
Yeah. So I always thought that was related directly to Odium. Like, if you connect with Odium and you accept that, then through that connection, he can remove your pain. And so does he do that through Dygonarthus, or does he just have that power himself and also Dygonarthus has that power?
I don't know.
I think it would be more likely to be both, because like Odium, the shard, is emotion, especially hatred, and that like strong, more what we consider maybe negative emotions. I'm not sure if that's the right word. But definitely emotion related. So I could see it being a bit of both.
What is it even from Cosmere? There's some quote coming to my head of, "There's no such thing as a negative emotion." You know what? It was Star Trek.
Yeah, I don't think that's
when Data start. Anyway, when Data starts getting his emotions, at some point, I think it was when Lore was feeding emotions to him. He's like, "I'm only getting the negative emotions," and then Counselor Troy is like, "Well, there's no such thing as a negative emotion. Emotions are what they are."
Yeah,
I could see Odium making the same argument. Like, they aren't negative; they're essential emotions.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, I keep making references outside of Cosmere.
You're fine.
All good. All good.
We need like a non-Cosmere reference counter from David.
Do we have another suspect besides Ishar talking? Because that's the number one suspect for me for the wind. I don't know how he's doing that, but it would seem to line up that Ishar is trying to either conscious Ishar is trying to call out to Kaladin for help, or malevolent Ishar is trying to lure Kaladin out to do something. I think one of those two options is the likely suspect here.
The Unmade is definitely a possibility, because we know they're working very heavily in Shinnevar.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's true, yeah.
I also just want to put out there could be a Spren of the Wind. that we just haven't seen before, and it could just literally be the Spren of the Wind that we're talking about. And this could be a big Spren, you know, maybe not a Bondsmith one, but could each Radiant Order have kind of created a Spren based on their
like
oaths and their or like, because like, you know,
Windrunner Spren,
like, yeah, the Windrunner Spren, which you start again, but coming back to the fourth ideal thing. Fourth ideal, you know, did Yasna? She spoke the fourth ideal. Is she in communication with a like? I wish we knew more about Yasna, right? But like,
are those the unmade?
Yeah, I mean, that's another thought, right? Is that there was a Spren of the Wind, which is now one of the unmade, and again, we're talking about like, is there some remnant of the original Spren in there? Like, there's too many options, and I don't know which one to pick. I think it's just a RAFO, but it's fun to discuss.
Yeah, granted, the unmade were around long before the Radiants. True. But they could, you know, perhaps line up. Kind of like the Heralds didn't really belong to any faction, but they ended up belonging to ones.
I still really like the theory about the unmade that they were Spren of the big cities around.
Yeah, I've heard that one too.
Like the original cities created by Adon Alsium, there would be a Spren of each of those cities, and the only one left is the sibling who hasn't been unmade.
I want to talk about Kaladin's family real quick before we go to Shallan. So, taking both of these chapters and Kaladin's role in them, it would seem to lend itself to the idea that Kaladin's family is safe, Kaladin can now lean on them and not need to worry about them anymore. Question for you guys. Do you guys think that lasts for the book? Is Liren, Hesina, and Oridan safe? Are they in this book heavily? Because I would argue, based on these two chapters we just got, I would say no. I think that Kaladin, it would seem to be that Kaladin has accomplished his goal and is enjoying his family time. Now, if Kaladin gets reinvested here and comes back out of retirement, of his 3-day retirement, whatever he's going to get here, that's totally possible and I would say plausible. But from what I see here, I think Kaladin's family might be safe and in the tower for the rest of the book.
I don't want to revisit Occupied Urethiru, so I'm with you just in that. So I think I've had enough of Occupied Urethiru. And I think that Urethiru, like, oh gosh, I just had a terrible thought, but like, you know, they're battling for territory right now. I don't think in 10 days they're going to be able to capture Urethiru and then claim that as their permanent territory. So I think that generally anyone who stays in Urethiru is safe at this point, because it's extremely well protected.
Especially now that it's turned on.
Yeah, like we can talk about like Radiance can use Tower Light. That's new. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's basically an infinite supply as long as they're near the tower. So like that's extremely powerful. Had the fused been able to finish unmaking the sibling, they would have had infinite tower light to use, or whatever version of void light plus whatever else. That would have been a huge stronghold for the fused. Like, I can see why they wanted it.
Right. I wonder if, I mean, I assume they knew that, the fused.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure that they've never even contemplated invading Urethiru until there wasn't a sibling bondsmith. And by the way, I do want to correct something, because I was thinking about this. I was like, because last episode we talked about Malishi and how Malishi was the only bondsmith at the time, and I thought Malishi was bonded to the Stormfather. And I was like, well, does that mean there wasn't an active tower at the time? But Malishi was bonded to the sibling, so that explains it.
Yeah, okay.
So maybe you always needed a bondsmith bonded to the sibling so that you could use Urethiru, because I don't think Urethiru was very inhabitable at all without the sibling active.
Right.
Now, does that require a bondsmith, or like between bondsmiths, was the sibling usually willing to just continue operations.
Just hang out until something happened. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. But that's kind of a tangent. But I wanted to correct myself from last episode because I feel like that's important.
Yeah, talking about the tower light, though, that made me think of Lyft. Do we know, can she only use Lifelight, or is she also able to use Stormlight?
I think she produces her own Lifelight by eating, and that's what she uses. She has never absorbed Stormlight from a gem. I think she can use Tower Light because, for the same reason Radiance can use Tower Light, because it's half Stormlight, half Lifelight. So maybe it's kind of like a universal donor.
Yeah.
For anyone who can use either.
I'd be willing to bet that in the first day here, the first part, we will see Lyft hanging out in your Ethereum and saying, like, oh, I don't need to eat all the time. This is weird. Like, I would bet quite a bit of money that Tower Light will sustain Lyft as long as she's in the tower.
Now, does that make Lyft want to stay at the tower, or does that make her want to leave the tower? Because when she was comfortable at the palace, had everything she ever wanted to eat, she zipped it out of there.
It's true.
Yeah.
I assume she'll get bored real quick. And all right. Shallan?
Shallan.
Shallan's a mess at the end of Rhythm of War here. She gets a hug from Testament, so that's something. And then I wanted to, so there's a couple specifics that it says on Testament. So it uses the term Deadeye Spren for Testament. However, it also says, it clearly says her head, her lines on her head were almost frozen. It uses the term almost frozen. And Pattern deliberately says, you're still bonded to her. You did not, you severed the bond with a rugged knife or like something like that. And that would almost be worse than a clean break and making her a Deadeye. So now I'm wondering if the term Deadeye is now a scale as opposed to a binary. Because Testament seems mostly dead, to use a Princess Bride term. not all dead, mostly dead.
One thing I'll say about that is we've kind of gotten hints that it was a scale, even back in, I don't know if this was Words of Radiance or Oathbringer. I think it had to be Oathbringer, because I think it was in Urethiru, but Shallan has a conversation with Pattern. You know, this might have been Words of Radiance. It doesn't matter. Shallan has a conversation with Pattern about the Deadeyes and asks if the Deadeyes could ever be revived. And Pattern gives this cryptic response of, perhaps if their knights were still alive.
Okay. A cryptic response?
Exactly. Yes. Pun intended.
I like it.
100%. Yeah.
If their knights are still alive. Okay.
So there, it sounds like he's saying, well, if that nail bond was still around and could be re-strengthened, then maybe that would help the Deadeyes. And so the difference here is that Shallan still has a connection to a nail bond with Testament, which is still helping Testament. And if Shallan were to die, then now Testament wouldn't have that and would become a true Deadeye.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's something that this book will really start to explore, not necessarily from a scientific standpoint like Rhythm of War, but more from the side of this is a real thing. It can actually happen. We started to see it with Maya, like you were saying, but I think that's something that will continue in this one.
I guess my second point is, I think this is now something that happens to Spren since Ba'ato Mishrim was captured. I don't think that there was one event that caused all the Deadeyes and now there's no more ways to create Deadeyes. I think a certain way of severing the nail bond now causes Deadeyes in perpetuity until Ba'ato Mishrim returns. I think that it's definitely going to get explored more.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely. Because if it was something that happened before that was pretty close to the Recreants. And the Spren would have figured out. Obviously, there would have been people that would have broken their bonds before that, and it wouldn't have caused such a huge issue. So I'm fully with you there.
And that's why it was so brave for Spren to start bonding humans again after so long. I think they stopped bonding humans primarily because of the danger. And, you know, Pattern has said many times, up until now, Shallan's, you're going to kill me, right? And what he means is you're going to turn me into a Deadeye, because there's so much risk of becoming a Deadeye now that didn't used to exist. Now he's saying, I don't think you're going to kill me anymore. So I think that is an ill omen for him. But...
Yes. So in Words of Radiance, Pattern is convinced that Shallan will kill him for good reason. He probably has Testament standing right next to him in Shadesmar at the time. But in this chapter, Pattern says, quote, I do not think you will kill me at all, Shallan! Exclamation point. So that's a very different sentiment for Pattern than in Words of Radiance. So
I think that's growth for Pattern. But it also has the vibes of it's one day before I retire.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's also something that the Spren forgot, or they didn't know. Because I had no indication that the Spren ever knew that they could become Deadeyes, or that they would become Deadeyes before that something changed. The only thing I've heard from the Spren, or I remember from the Spren that talked about it, was this is just something that happens, never wondering what changed, but more this is the way things are and have always been. Which makes sense, because all of them would have been born after everything happened.
There's also the thing to consider that when they make the traversal to the physical realm, they forget so much.
Yeah, that's true.
Except Windle, who apparently went through a special process to preserve his memory, and then we never actually get to hear any of his wisdom, and because Lyft cuts him off every time.
Windle has a breath scarf where he stores all of his memories. That's my.
That definitely fits the starving artist. The ambiance he gives.
He was a well-known and regarded artist. Thank you. Oh, the way he stacked chairs was impressive.
Yeah. Oh, he and Yumi would get along. Stacking things.
So, does bringing back Ba'ino Mishram make your shard blade disappear? If you're a normal shard bearer, just, you know, what, one day you just feel your bond just gone.
In the shard plate too. Yeah.
Maybe. I mean,
are shard plate are dead.
Yeah. The plate, friend, right? Plate's actually an interesting question, but you know, does Oathbringer come back to life if we bring back Ba'ino Mishram?
I would lean towards yes, but I don't know if it's an instant thing or if you have to go like Spren to Spren and heal them in some way.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would think yes, but it's probably not going to be that simple.
Anything else?
There's a couple. You just in general?
Oh,
or,
yeah, just in general.
Yeah, I want to talk about the illustration at the top.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, can pull that up. So I'm not a
go ahead.
I'm an audiobook person. Is this the Star Spren in Rhythm of War? Have we seen this illustration before?
Oh.
I'll look. If you guys want to further discuss it, I'll look for it real quick.
Yeah. I honestly have no idea what's going on in this. Like, who drew it? Is this a Shallan drawing? Who is that person on the bottom right, other than the Witch King?
the Witch King of Angmar. No, I was thinking Chiri, but actually the Star Spren makes sense, because that fits in with, that's probably formless in the corner. And then in the other corner is like cute hearts. He loves me. So that fits with the like the circle, what Shallan's going through.
I do think it's a Spren, a cognitive realm Spren, a Shadesmar Spren, because there's two of them in the bottom left, like dancing with each other. And it does look like stars are falling off of them. So I believe it could just be the Star Spren. Is this a scene from Rhythm of War?
Well, yes. So she makes the observation in this illustration that it struck a pose and it held it for me. That's the scene out of the Star Spren scene when they're traveling in to Lasting Integrity.
Yeah.
Okay. Adolin so she drew that. And then somehow on the bottom right, we get this face. And she does not look as happy as those Star Spren. So was that added? Is that what we're supposed to be noticing?
I think. I guess I'm repeating myself a little bit, but I think that is her fear of formless in the future. And I think it's just supposed to show the dichotomy, completely different. Like you can just tell visually.
Do you think formless is edgy enough to wear a 9-pointed crown and color eyes white? Yeah.
I mean, formless if it's really a 9-pointed crown, like let's count 1, 2, 3, 4. I count 6.
It's 7. Yeah, it'd be 7.
Yeah, 7. Because if it was 9, then it's like, oh, is this Odium's champion? Like, it feels so out of place, doesn't it? Like, she drew the whole Star Spren thing and then, like, later just needed a page to really quickly sketch someone she saw.
It could be our one of our Nalthians just hanging out in Lasting Integrity that she walks past in Rhythm of War. You guys remember that?
No, vaguely. I remember 16, and I still want to know who the heck 16 is, but is that going to come up in a Shallan chapter?
No, don't we know who 16 is? I think there's a Words of Brandon on 16. I think we know who that is.
Last I checked Words of Brandon, we didn't, but let's check Coppermind.
All right, I'll let you check it. I cannot find the Star Spren print art. Maybe there isn't, and I'm just thinking of that one by Jordy Rapture, and I'm assuming that's in the book somewhere. But, I mean, the scene is definitely in there, but...
I mean, yeah, maybe... Coppermind doesn't know much, except that 16 is from Scadrial and probably named themselves 16 because of the significance of the number in the Cosmere.
Okay.
But we don't know much more.
16's Damu.
It's, it's clearly... It's clearly Spook, Lord Mistborn.
Oh, yeah.
Not impossible, but I wouldn't put my money on it. Okay, so I do back to this sketch. I do think it's just the Star Spren sketch that we saw in Rhythm of War, because it's not in Rhythm of War. So I assume that it's in there now to just include it.
Do you have like a chapter in Rhythm of War?
It's like one of the first couple chapters while they're in Shadesmar on the way to Lasting Integrity. So that would be like the beginning of part 3, I think. It's becoming a research episode.
Yeah. I don't, maybe this is something to punt at this point.
Yeah.
There definitely isn't a sketch of it. She sketched High Spren. She sketched Peak Spren.
Yeah, I did see those.
They're all labeled in the table of contents on Kindle, so that's helpful.
Yeah, that is nice.
That's the only sketches that are Shadesmar related. So yeah, this sketch does not appear directly. It would be cool if it appeared without that lady in the bottom right in Rhythm of War, and we're supposed to notice that that's new, but that's just, I'm really latching on to that. That's my pet theory for the day.
Yeah.
That's added later, but.
Anything else?
I just want to really briefly talk about how Liren is helping with training new medics. Like, they're really low on medics and surgeons and healing in general. And it's not mentioned, but in my mind, that's could be related to the fact that, you know, they don't have Taravangian's help anymore. And Taravangian provides those resources.
That's true. Well, and at the beginning of Rhythm of War, Liren's going through after midlife crisis of he's being irrelevant now because of all the radiance, but it's very quickly restored that no, he's very much needed. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the only other thing I wanted to just briefly talk about was how the battling is getting worse, not better.
Grab for land.
They're fighting over desolate land that no one lives in just so that they can draw the border as, you know, generously as they can for their own side when it cements in. And that's like one of those like consequences, like the unintended consequences of a treaty like this, where you're mm-hmm. like, we're having a ceasefire in 10 days. That's just going to make the fighting worse until that deadline approaches.
Right.
And that we see that in the real world too.
Right.
And I wonder if that is going to cause escalations in the use of things like anti-light and explosives and things like that.
Oh yeah. If you're going to make a dive for someone's spren, you got to do it now as opposed to in however many days. Yeah.
Yeah. And just really trying to capture territory as quickly as possible. That's when you get desperate.
Or you have people like Leshwi who know that if they're going to use anti-void light against somebody else, another fuse, they have to do it now as opposed to in 10 days. Interesting.
Yeah, so I think we're going to see a lot of fighting in this book going up to the contest.
Everybody's just going to be on a different battlefront somewhere.
There was also this one line I want to talk about. Sorry, I didn't give you a chance to pipe in about that before we move on. But
no, you're good. I don't have much to add. Yeah, since it said day one, Kaladin Shallan, I don't think they're going to be very involved in the fighting because, you know, she's at lasting integrity. Kaladin is going to Shinovar. And I'm sure there will be plenty of fighting there, but not quite what we're expecting to see. It's good to see Liren being able to fill a role. Kind of funny to see the consequences of him not taking Lidai seriously and therefore Kaladin didn't. And just heartwarming to see that family dynamic.
The more I think about it, I think it will be day one and it'll be like 6 chapters. And then it'll be day 2 and we'll get like Dalinar, Renarin, Jasnah, Wit. And then it'll go to day 3, you know, Kaladin, Zeth, Renarin, like, you know, just it'll be really rapid fire these days for the first couple parts. I'm putting my money on that.
Yeah, I could see that.
That definitely sounds right. We're going to be jumping back and forth between storylines, especially with the way he wrote the books. We know he wrote each storyline all the way through. It was 3 different storylines, and then he put them together in chronological order. So maybe the days, tracking the days, really helped him put that back together.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Did you want to get into anything else with this, David?
I did, and I'm trying to remember what it was.
Okay, well, while you're thinking of that, I kind of wanted to talk about Syl and her new thing of going at full size and just what consequences perhaps or just what this could mean moving forward. I have some thoughts. What do you think, Trevor?
Because it feels right was the reasoning she gave, which I don't know if I agree with her. I mean, I'm not going to tell her how to feel, but I don't feel that it's right for Syl to go around full size because I don't know. Maybe I'm still trying to preserve Syl's innocence, which she's like making a point of that she's no longer that. I thought it was more interesting that she's color coding her clothes to tell Kaladin if she's visible to other people or not. Mm-hmm. Like that was a very interesting mechanic to include in there.
And wearing a glove as well.
There's I was talking with some other people on Discord about this, and also there was some discussion around social media in general. This is very exciting for a certain segment of the fan base, and very harrowing for another segment of the Cilladin ship.
No. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because he Brandon threw in a ton of stuff, like more than one thing, to be like, she acts like a girl, but she's not really a girl. She's wearing her safe hand glove now. She's being a big person much more often. Like, oh, I wish I could touch her. Like, really, really trying to emphasize, like, when I put them together, don't think it's weird, please.
Right.
And then also we had whatever the heck Ishar was doing at the end of Rhythm of War. Like,
yeah.
All of that can come together of like, if any Spren could survive Ishar's experiment, it's sounding like Syl, because Syl wants to be more present in the physical realm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I personally don't think Kaladin needs to be shipped with anybody. Kaladin Syl gives me the heebie-jeebies a bit, but I know some people are very into that ship. So
I'm definitely not in that boat. However, I'm not fully against it. Like, if that's where this is going, I wouldn't be completely upset. I'm not hoping for that by any means, but that's, I've never once thought that they should be together.
Same. Yeah, I'm the same. I'm not a big fan of it. Didn't know it was a thing, but I could see it maybe being interesting. It's just that for so much of the story, it's like he's helping not really a child, but almost very, very childlike person right. grow up. It feels weird to me.
Yeah, I agree. Who do you guys think is the champion? Just to get this out of the way. But we didn't really talk about it, but.
Both champions?
Yes.
I mean, Dalinar is his own champion. I think I don't see why that would change. And then Odium's champion, I still dislike the idea of it, but I do think it's going to be a baby or a child.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because Taravangian's just trying to wiggle out of it.
Yeah, there's definitely a hole in the contract that Taravangian knows about that we don't.
Yeah, and then there is that one death rattle, which Taravangian would be familiar with.
It's true.
Yeah. Yeah, I could really see it being along those lines. Definitely Dalinar is his own champion. And I think whatever it is, it's something that Taravangian thinks he's being sneaky to wiggle out of. I think we might have talked about it on Discord, but he thinks he's being sneaky to wiggle out of something. But really, that trying to wiggle out of it is going to present an opportunity in the back five that is going to help them overcome whatever the big bad is.
You think it's the back five and not like the end of this book?
Yeah. Yeah. I think the heroes lose. And I think because they lose and over time they learn and they understand more and they realize just what Taravangian did by not holding to the spirit of the contract.
So there's a chapter between Dalinar and Taravangian in Oathbringer about if you have four suspects and three of them are guilty, what do you do? And there's no way to be able to figure it out. And Taravangian says you have to kill all four. And Dalinar says you have to let all four go because you can't necessarily figure it out. That conversation is extremely important, and Taravangian is going to use it to get out of the contest. But that, if I say that said, I don't think the contest of champions is actually going to happen. If it does, I think Dalinar will be convinced to let Zeth be his champion, because of Nightblood, and then. As far as Odium's champion against Zeth, I really have no idea. Maybe L.
That's assuming Kaladin and Zeth are able to travel to Shinnevar, cure everything that's going on over there, including Ishar, and come back in time for the contest.
Correct.
That's a tight deadline for them.
They can do it.
If they can do that, I could see Ishar being the champion.
Okay, yeah.
You know, if they could do that, if they could do that, I would love to see them following the High Storm all the way around.
Yeah, all the way around. I was going to say they could take the High Storm back, but yeah, they'll just take a High Storm all the way back around.
And we can finally see the origin. Oh, true. I want to see.
Does it go all the way around, or does it fizzle out over the ocean and then start a new one?
That would be unfortunate if it did fizzle out and then you had to wait a couple days for the new one.
Do we just at the end of the book learn about like the Roshar equivalent of the Southern Skadrians that have been there the whole time?
Yeah, so that's how this book ends, is Kaladin and Zeth are just stranded at the origin for no reason. There you go.
With Ishar.
Yeah, with Ishar, with Nightblood, what else do they have with them? Yeah.
Why don't we just add Honor's Drop to the list for no reason?
Yeah, true. Yeah, yep. Sure, sure.
The origin, yep, is just where they hit Honor's Drop. Yeah.
Oh, all right. Man.
Let's close this episode here, and we can reconvene next week with whatever chapters we get on Monday. Thanks for joining me, David and Tim.
Thanks for having me on.
Ciao.